Welcome to the North and South of Things podcast, a show dedicated to discussion of topics important to the LGBT community and the community at large. Here are your hosts, Mark and George.
Hello, everyone. This is Mark in St. Paul, and you're listening to the North and South of Things. And joining me from Atlanta today is...
It's George in Atlanta. How are you, Mark?
I'm grateful.
How are you grateful? I'm thankful.
This weekend is Thanksgiving, and in the United States, this is where we take a day out of our lives to kind of take stock of what we're grateful and thankful for. And George, did you know that this holiday goes back to the Civil War?
Well, you know, I kind of assumed it went back even a little earlier. I don't know why I thought it would go back to sort of the earliest colonial days, but really not till the Civil War?
Not until the Civil War. It was instituted by President Lincoln. The colonial sort of pilgrims didn't come into the picture until later on. So actually, this is a relatively new holiday in the grand scheme of things. And I kind of find it interesting that a Republican president instituted this holiday.
But in all honesty, aren't the Republicans and the Democrats like in different, completely opposite roles compared?
You look at American history, it is quite a bit different. But as you know, when you have a holiday that happens every year, certain sort of traditions come along. And why don't you tell me some of the traditions that you've observed throughout the years and what they mean to you?
You know, I have to say, Mark, for those who've been listening to Georgia and Atlanta or some of my early audio booze, you may have picked up on the fact that I have, our family was not the most sort of nuclear, sound, well-footed, stable home environment. But Thanksgiving, oddly enough, was one of those times that we did sort of abide by some sense of tradition. The family always got together, and there was always turkey, sometimes turkey and ham. It's a big family. It's seven children. And that's pretty much the extent of the tradition. In fact, that's, you know, not to underplay it, but that's huge for my family, the fact that we would all be together and actually observe some sort of sense of normalcy in terms of baking the bird. My mom baked, I guess our food traditions were the bird, the turkey, gravy, dressing. No effort whatsoever. I'm not sure how old I was before I realized that cranberries didn't come from a can. I wasn't sure what this thing cranberry sauce was. I just knew it had ridges on it and it looked like Jell-O. I'm pretty sure I was in college before I knew any different. And what else? You know, mashed potatoes. I mean, so there was a blend of sort of traditional Sunday cooking with Thanksgiving, which you know, took it up to the next level a little bit. I will say my mother's dressing was awful. to this day, if I get a whiff of somebody's dressing that has too much sage in it, she would empty an entire can of sage. I'm not kidding you.
Ooh.
It was, I mean, it had both the appearance and taste of an old army cot.
Oh dear,
it was awful. It was awful.
Herbs such as rosemary and sage are really powerful. And in my opinion, less is more, especially in that instance. You know, my family usually went up to my grandparents. And this is a small town in rural Minnesota, farming community. Called Albany, Minnesota, which is about an hour and a half north of the Twin Cities. And it was a big affair. It was me, my parents, my brother, my sister, my grandparents, of course. And then I had two uncles and an aunt and they brought all of their kids. And through the years, it was, you know, it just kind of grew. I think we were like 23 at one point.
Wow. Wow.
So it was some of the best memories that I do have of my family. And, you know, in the South, dressing, you know, you've mentioned that a couple of times.
Right.
Most up here in the North, a lot of people refer to it as stuffing.
Right.
But actually, my family called it dressing as well. And I loved my grandmother's dressing. And my sister actually made some this year that came incredibly close to grandma's dressing. So we also had the ridged cranberries. And of course, turkey. Turkey was the norm. We really didn't have turkey and ham at the same time, although my sister has started that tradition. Actually, just a couple of years ago. What other kinds of side dishes did you have?
You know, I have to say, we weren't really big on some of the things you see popular today, like the, good Lord, Atlanta is burning again. I'm pretty sure that there's never a fire truck here unless I've turned this mixer on for a podcast. Let's just go with it. We didn't eat a lot of broccoli. I mean, there may have been a salad involved. I'd say there was probably some sort of traditional salad, or just simple iceberg lettuce salad. Certainly no. Oh, help me. They look like little cabbages. Brussels sprouts?
Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, no,
right.
None of that business. Probably limited to corn was usually involved. There was corn. Mm-hmm. Could be on the cob or, you know, some sort of creamed corn thing. Mom was big on fresh tomatoes, as fresh as you could get this time of year. She liked tomatoes and cucumbers. So sometimes just vegetables, you know, straight from the produce. I'm trying to think if there was anything else. Dessert. Yeah, dessert. There appeared to be very few in the family that enjoyed the pumpkin pie. But she always felt compelled to make one pumpkin pie. I think it was largely because the boys, and there was five of us, we didn't like it. So and any other dessert that she made would be gone in a matter of seconds. So I think she made the pumpkin pie for herself because she knew she wasn't going to get any other dessert. But she did do banana pudding was huge. I don't know why. But banana pudding was huge on Thanksgiving. I think that's because so many of us did enjoy that. And maybe a pineapple upside down cake. I remember that a few times.
Yeah, I've noticed some of my friends on social media who are from the South that pineapple upside down cake seems to make a very regular appearance. And it was always pie up here. You know, there were times when my other grandmother would make mincemeat. I really enjoyed a good mincemeat pie. And we'd have pumpkin, of course, and sometimes apple or blueberry. Now, one of the pies that I really like to make around this time of year and the holidays is a fresh cranberry pie. And it's using fresh cranberries and orange zest. And I really like it because it's very tart. It's a little bit unique. And I'm usually the one who gets to enjoy it. Probably have made it the last 7 years or so. It's one of my favorite pies.
Wonderful.
So this year, I was invited to my sister's place for Thanksgiving, And she asked me to bring George, I hate to tell you, but a relish tray.
My goodness. I saw that on Twitter. What on earth? I mean, has she met you?
she knows me. The thing about my family is we're very meat and potatoes simple. Mm-hmm. And anything that kind of falls out of any normal parameters is suspect. She had turkey and ham and dressing, mashed potatoes, gravy, corn, and dinner rolls and Jell-O salad. That's pretty much it.
So she's afraid of anything that looks like a spice or an herb.
That's right.
And how dare you bring that fancy food in here?
That's right. Actually, last year, she asked me to bring a relish tray for Easter, and I did that, but I snuck in cornichons. Actually they went over very well, which surprised me, because one of her brother-in-law basically said, oh, these are really, really good. And I was very surprised because, as you know, cornichons have a definite mustard mm-hmm. kind of flavor to them. And so that I try to sneak things in from time to time just to shake them up a little bit.
I've heard something today on NPR, the morning edition, the Saturday morning edition. And it was talking about, somebody from BBC had written a book on, I think it's called First Bite. And it was about, the fact that our taste buds, our preferences, our likes and dislikes are not as personal as we might think they are. We think they're informed by our own sort of, but actually it may come from your earliest, interaction with that particular taste profile. And so parents can actually do more to influence that taste bud. When the hell did your taste buds get opened up if your family subjected you to?
It actually happened to me probably in my mid-teens. My best friend in high school, his parents were both college educated. My family was rather blue collar, but they had lived in different places. They had moved from Texas up to Minnesota, and prior to that, they were living in Belgium. They had a wider experience with food. I remember the first time I had actually had a fresh avocado wasn't until I was about 16 years old.
Wow.
And my love of food and cooking kind of followed quickly after that. I think we might have touched on this mm-hmm. in the food show that we talked about, how in junior high, everyone was required to take both home ec
right.
and shop class. So I started cooking and I loved it. And the reason for that is because my mother wasn't really a very good cook. And she could do, I have yet to find somebody that can do a pot roast or a beef roast like my mother was able to do. Sunday dinner was usually a roast of some kind and potatoes. And she was the one that actually taught me how to make gravy. It's a life skill that has come in handy. I remember there have been a couple of Thanksgivings where I had been invited, and the host or hostess was like, who knows how to make gravy? Because they were about to open a jar, and I said, put that away.
How dare you?
How dare you?
Direct me to the drippings in that pan.
Exactly.
Yeah. I have to tell you.
Out of my way.
I have to tell you, I had two cooking firsts this week, and one of them involved gravy.
Really?
Yeah. Believe it or not, the Southern boy who was probably grown up on, brought up on gravy and biscuits and potatoes, I've actually never been able to make gravy. And a couple years ago, maybe about a year and a half ago, I went home to visit my mom for Thanksgiving, and I said, listen, I want you to show me how to make gravy. And what I didn't have the heart to tell her was that her gravy skills had fallen off since the kids left home, and she hadn't practiced it a lot. It wasn't very good, I'm going to be honest with you. Certainly not the gravy we had growing up. Mm-hmm. But something just happened a couple of weeks ago. I was watching about the only thing I watch on TV anymore is either football or cooking shows, and I was watching Trisha Yearwood's show on the Food Network. And she mentioned this 4-4-2 ratio. And I was like, okay, now that sounds like something tangible. Because to me, gravy just seems like this intangible thing that you can't happen. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a little bit of magic. There's like some fairy dust or something that you got to sprinkle over it, you know? Because I know I've tried it a couple times and failed miserably. I mean, like wall paste material. But she said this 4-4-2 ratio always works for me. 4 tablespoons of some fat, 4 tablespoons of flour, and 2 cups of liquid. So if it's a breakfast gravy, it's, you know, milk. And I was like, okay, I know the process you're supposed to go through, and now that I know the ratio, I'm gonna try this. So I did. It worked out. It was not the best gravy. Mm-hmm. The flavor was good. It was clumpy. So I think I didn't use enough oil on the front end. But
actually, I am staunchly in the cornstarch camp. So rather than using flour, which I have used, I find I get more consistent results with cornstarch than I do with flour. So
is that the only point of flour is to thicken? Is it not part of the...
Yes, it's used as a thickening agent pretty much only. When you are making a roux or a bechamel sauce, you're using that same kind of that ratio. When I make a bechamel, however, I do use flour, but you can, especially when it's gravy. My mother taught me how to use cornstarch, and that's what I use. And that is practically lump free. If you mix your cornstarch with some of the liquid that you're using before you add it to your pan sauce. So,
well, there you go, kids.
That's a tip.
You've
that's
heard it here. For you. Well, my second first, first ever, you know, I have, in the last couple of years, I seem to have grown quite fond of fried eggs, just a simple over easy egg. I think most of my life, it's always been about the scrambled egg. And then I went through an omelet phase. But the last couple of years, I've tried to sort of kick the carbs out of breakfast and just do like sausage and a couple fried eggs, no toast or anything like that. And there's a place in the building where I work that has, it's like a breakfast buffet. So they have literally every possible breakfast item available, including fried eggs. And they're always really good. And I'm like, you know, this is ridiculous. I could do this at home if I would really try. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, okay, I know it's supposed to be low and slow, and I'm very impatient when it comes to cooking. That's the biggest problem. And I finally just put it on, it wasn't medium, it was somewhere between low and medium. And the other big problem is I always break the yolk, right?
Yeah.
And so when making a breakfast at home and you break the yolk, and first of all, I'm putting them both in the pan, right? Put both eggs in the pan. So if one breaks, I'm like, fuck it, and just scramble them both, you know? Mm-hmm. But this time I took the advice of one of the cooking shows where you break the egg into a separate dish and put it in a pan, then break another one in a separate dish. So if one breaks, you've sort of not messed up the whole thing. And of course, I don't want to throw it just because I broke the yolk. I don't want to throw away an egg. So this time I'm like, okay, I'm actually not going to accept anything other than a perfectly fried egg. So I wound up destroying two eggs, threw them away, and realized I was cracking it the wrong way. And once I corrected that, I got a good clean break, and then I was just very patient. Very patient. It firmed up on the bottom, and it was easy to flip, and no broken yolk on the flip, and it was two picture-perfect fried eggs.
You know, I was watching some show at some point, and a short order cook gave me a cheat that you can use to, when you're doing a fried egg like that, that will make them look like they are over easy, but you don't actually have to flip them. So you crack them into the pan and you let them firm up a bit. Then you take a half ounce of water, add it to the pan, and then you cover that pan with a cover.
Ah, so it like steams.
It steams it, and you want to do it for about a minute and a half at most. You'll lift up that cover, and you will have two perfectly gorgeous eggs that are over easy.
Well, I'm gonna try that. Have you also heard? I think I've seen this on TV where they'll have enough fat in the pan, whether it's oil or butter or whatever, where they tilt the pan and they use a spoon and they keep throwing the hot.
That's a basted method.
Yeah. That looks really laborious. I don't mind doing that for a steak. I'm not going to do that for an egg.
My grandfather used to do bacon grease.
Yeah.
And I swear he had like a half an inch thick of bacon grease in that pan.
Wow.
When he would do his.
Wow. Well, there you go, kids. You got some extra cooking tips today on top of our conversation. So, what did you do? So this year you brought the relish tray. Yeah. Did you sneak in any new items for them this year?
No, it was I actually had to go to the grocery store on Wednesday night, which I don't recommend,
right,
at all. Because I simply ran out of time and I had to put this together. So it was a very simple relish tray. It was black olives, celery, carrots, radishes, baby dill pickles, and then I made a really quick ranch dip to go along with it.
Tasty. I may have made what is possibly the quickest Thanksgiving dinner on the planet, and this was not a frozen meal. I bought a boar's head turkey breast, right?
Okay.
This was about 1.75 pounds, right? So just under a 2-pound turkey breast. I cheated. I got stovetop stuffing, which I adore, by the way.
I do too.
That flavor profile for me, I would slap my mother for that. It is really, really good. And then I bought some flash frozen vegetables are all the rage now. I mean, and you get them in single serving size. There was these delicious roasted potatoes, complete with a little butter sauce. And in just, it's like a one person serving. And, you know, literally, this was 25 minutes, everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was turkey breast, sliced turkey breast, stovetop stuffing, and roasted potatoes. Ta da.
Wow.
That was it.
Instant Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I mean, I should have gone a little more healthy, some other vegetables, a little roughage maybe. But I was like, yeah.
Well, you know, it's the holidays.
Yeah. And cooking for one, I just didn't, I was invited to a couple different things and I had to work today, so I couldn't go home to Virginia. I was like, you know, I really, you know, I just want to relax. So I'm just going to, but you know, I don't, I do want a little bit of Thanksgiving, so yeah, it was good. I would probably buy one of those turkey breasts again. It's really tasty. Of course, everything Boar's Head makes, I'm sure it's filled with nitrates, I'm sure, but it was tasty.
That sounds awesome.
Well, that is cooking show part two, kids. Mark and I have talked about the fact that we might want to do more of these cooking shows. Today's Thanksgiving edition seemed like a logical fit.
That's true.
Any other time-saving tips for folks?
I like to do my baking in advance. Uh-huh. So what I usually do is... The night before is when I will make pies, and then that morning I will do, which is actually, I'm going to make this later on today. I have a recipe for a cheddar and onion Irish soda bread recipe.
Ooh.
That is absolutely out of this world.
And that sounds like that needs to be paired with some sort of delicious... minestrone, or
actually it's going to be paired with a green split pea soup that I'll be making as well to accompany that.
Wonderful. All right, we're gonna do more cooking shows.
Absolutely.
Well, Mark, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving weekend with the family, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. You too, George.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The North and South of Things. More information available at northandsouthofthings.com. Follow Mark on Twitter at Laughing Buddha. That's LaughingBuddha. And George at George in Atlanta. Our podcast theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.